Playlist one, here we go. 1, 2, 3.
So here's what I'm saying about Michael.
Yeah.
I watch his stuff on Facebook all the time when he's playing at his open mic stuff.
We should go on a Saturday night.
We should go. And maybe get afford a haircut, because I don't know what the hell's going on with the hair in there.
I like my hair.
Good morning, Chicago. Yes, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous Sunday morning overlooking our beautiful city. Thank you so much, Carl and Lisa, two of my favorite people on the planet. And I look forward to seeing you both at the open mic very, very soon. So this is Michael Heidemann coming to you live from your stereo atop the massive 50,000-watt blowtorch we call WGN Radio. If you've heard my voice before, it's probably from the plethora of shows I've worked on as an executive producer and music correspondent on The Steve Cochran Show with Pete McMurray, Matt Bubala, John Williams, last night with Mark Carman, and of course, here on WGN Radio's Nightside, and tonight I'm in for the great Dave Plyer. But now it's just you and me, listeners, just you and me, on until 5 a.m. or until the sun comes up and I turn back into a vampire. So it's great to be with you tonight. If you want to call in 312-981-7200. Again, 312-981-7200. Also, our text line. I'd love to say hi to all y'all who are out there. We're broadcast 38 states in Canada. So the further you reach, the more I want to hear you. We had somebody calling from Fiji one time. I'd love to hear you again. So if you know me, you know that I'm a lover of all things music. I mean, why the heck not? We live in the greatest music city here in the world. In fact, I'm coming to you straight from the weekly open mic that I host here in Chicago's River North. Yes, you know, unlike some radio personalities, I'm not going to throw anybody out there, but I am here with you, the people, every single Saturday night from 9 until midnight over at Bill's. We just celebrated our one-year anniversary, actually, and we're located at 30 East Hubbard, right next to the House of Blues. If you are so musically inclined, I'd love to have you all come out, check out the show. It's a great chill vibe, and it's a great way to just get in touch with our music community. And tonight, you know, it was one of the best nights that I think I've had at the open mic. It was such a cool vibe. So many great artists, so I wanted to shout out to all of them who were out at the open mic. Thanks again for coming out and joining in on all the fun. Lots of very, very talented individuals. Tess, God Level Goat, Michael, so many amazing people that I love seeing every single week. We had an incredibly eclectic crowd tonight, too. That was a tough word to say. So shout out again to everybody who performed. But I have nothing but love for you all. So let's talk about this really interesting thing that has been kind of bouncing around in my mind for the last few weeks. And that's fear. The idea of fear. And that's what I wanted to start it out with. You know, shake up the cage a little bit. Get people out of their ordinary lives. You know what I mean? Because we all go through these kind of things where, much like an open mic, you see that microphone, you get on stage, and you get nervous, and you think, oh, these people aren't going to like me. This crowd is going to attack me. They're going to boo me when I'm trying to give out my heart and soul playing music. So I thought we'd talk about that. Speaking in front of others. There's this great line from Jerry Seinfeld that always has stuck with me. And being a broadcaster, I often remember this. And going in front of people playing music and being there with my guitar. And he said, if public speaking is the number one fear, I guess you'd rather be the one in the casket than the one giving the eulogy. I mean, come on, it's true. Why do we have these kind of fears in our lives? So I wanted to explore this. So if you ever had anything going in your life that you were a little bit afraid of, I wanted to hear from you and how you overcame it. The idea of fear. And it doesn't have to be the worst of things, you know. People go through very tough things in their lives, but I'm focusing on the things that we can overcome. You know, what have you been afraid to do? It could be something small like snakes or clowns or something more real life like asking your boss for a raise or jumping out of a plane, you know? And now, how did you overcome it? Did you go through some kind of like shock aversion therapy or have a lobotomy or, I don't know, just go into a room full of clowns and freak yourself out? I just wanted to know. Or is it just one of those things that you just thought one day you woke out of bed and you're like, I can't take it anymore. I need to just shake out of this. I need to become my best self and figure out how to do this. Because I want to learn about strategy. How do you overcome your fears? I mean, I'm an open mic host. I see it all the time. People come up on the stage and they are all nervous. Hey, this is my first song that I've ever played. This is my song that I wrote in my room or my basement. This song's about my mom or my dad or my girlfriend, and I'm really nervous to play it. I'd never done this before. And then after that, after they hear the crowd and they get it over with, 3 minutes in front of a microphone, in front of a crowd staring at you, they're coming up to me again, tapping me on the shoulder. Excuse me, Mr. Mike, could you do me a favor and let me perform again? Because I think I'm ready to go. I'm not nervous anymore. And it's like, really? You're a totally new person after that? After just 1 minute in front of a crowd? So why do we put that idea in our mind? And would the world be a better place if we were a little less fearful? So that's the idea. Call in 312-981-7200. What is your strategy when it comes to fear and overcoming that? Because, hey, I need help with that. I get afraid of things all the darn time. That's what I wanted to kind of dive into tonight. We have a great show that kind of focuses on that. It's like a running thread through the show. So call again, 312-981-7200. You're going to be speaking to Ben, our producer, who's a great, great man. But first and foremost, this is my favorite part of the night, and I'm so, so elated to be with you all tonight. I need to give a quick shout-out to my compadres behind the mic, my loyal squad with me tonight. Hello, Roger Badishan News.
Well, hello, Mr. Michael Heideman. How are you? You are, I think, one of the busiest people I know. You work full time during the week.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Bill's Burgers open mic on Saturday nights.
Mm-hmm.
You fill in here and there and everywhere, in front of the mic, behind the mic, on top of the mic, underneath the mic.
I built the mic.
Yeah,
my name is Mike.
You built the mic, right? That's right. It's got your name. Hello, this is Mike. Seriously, I don't really know anyone as busy as you. I don't think you have time to sleep. I don't think you have slept in how many years now?
It's, well, knowing by the gray hairs that I see every single morning, it's been a few.
A few. But,
it's funny you say that, because really I'm not that busy. All of my time is spent just, you know, focusing on what the next project is, you know, what the next idea is. And it comes literally from seeing people like you, Roger, and our great hosts and producers here, and all the great legends that I've seen, like Howard Stern and Bill Murray. I'm thinking, how do these guys do all this stuff and still have time, you know, to live this lucrative career? I'm like, do they ever stop working and taking meetings? And it's all about just allocating your time, I guess. And
it is allocating your time. It's focusing on the goal and knowing when you reach a goal and when to reset your goals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think what a lot of people do, and this may fall into your category of discussion for tonight, is people set unrealistic goals too many times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to have $1 million in 5 years. You might still get that. No one's saying you can't. You can't work towards it.
Mm-hmm.
But how about if you take it in smaller steps? How about if by the end of the year you save $5,000 or $10,000 and then invest that and then have your money work for you? Instead of not having a plan to make that dream happen. And then once that dream happens, which may be sooner or later than you think, what are you going to do next?
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to bring to our listeners. Mm-hmm. Like, what is your strategy getting behind that? Because I think what happened, Roger, last night when I was thinking about the show tonight,
mm-hmm.
was you and I were talking with Mark Carman.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
He was going through this big dilemma in his mm-hmm. life. He's like, should I make this risk of being this tennis coach,
mm-hmm.
or should I stick with my normal radio career, which is safe and comforting like a little blanket?
Yeah. I think he was in a major dilemma, and we've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
We've all had these things. I know that, you know, my dream since I was in grade school was to be on the radio in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. What was that first small step you took to get into the radio business?
Well, in high school, we started up a high school radio station. And I did everything I could. I DJed. I did news. I did basketball and football broadcasts. Of course, back then, we never went live. We had to tape everything. Then I majored in broadcasting in college. And then I got out and started getting small jobs at mm-hmm. small stations in small markets. And I worked my way up. But instead of focusing on being on the air, I started to specialize in a certain area, and it became news.
Mm-hmm.
And so I focused on that. But here's a catch. I got married. We had a kid. And after we got back to Chicago, and I worked at Q101 for a couple of years, because of a downsizing there, and I didn't have a plan for what happens if this is no longer there, I had to reinvent myself and go in a completely different direction. And it took 30 years before I got back on the air in radio.
Well, and look at you now, Roger. You get to sit here with me and just and live the best life you can, right?
Well, you know, at my age, I got to have some people around to make sure I take my medicine on time. You know,
hey, did you eat your burger yet, Roger?
No, you've got French fries with the burger. I'm ready for it. I'm going to I think I'm going to save it for later this afternoon when I wake up from sleeping and after I get home today.
Yeah.
And before I come back tonight, that's going to be my meal to end all meals for Sunday. And I'm going to come in just totally satisfied for the 6 o'clock shift tonight. And I'll have a smile on my face.
Well, that's all I want, Roger, is you to be happy. That was my fear, is I need to make sure Roger is happy.
No, that's not a fear, because Roger likes to be happy all the time.
He's always happy. Yeah. And again, my co-pilot again tonight, Captain Ben Anderson in the producer's booth. How's it going, Ben?
It's going pretty good.
It's good to see you, man.
Yeah, I like seeing Roger happy, too. So
it's the best part of my day.
It's a goal every day for me.
Yeah, well, I'd love to dive into the idea of fear with you, too, because you fly Ooh. Planes, you do so much stuff, and it'd be great to dive into your mind for a little bit too, so we'll put that.
I don't
on
know
the
if you really want to do that. I mean, my mind scares me.
Wow.
We got a caller coming up here too. It's a BA Bristol who wanted to talk about some fears, and we're going to get them right after our break. We also have to give one more shout out to our engineer Dan Long in the booth, aka Oscar, aka the man with a plan with the bandana in. A nice tan. I don't know what I did there, but I liked it. We're going to take a quick break. We have an amazing show tonight. We're talking all things burgers. We're talking all things music. I have this great fear. Something that I did this week that I wanted to talk to you all about when I get back from the break. We have Aaron from the Tailgate Show talking about the upcoming Bears season. I'm very excited to dive into that. Taylor Ledden talking about a brand new book, kind of along with the idea of fear, is what you need to do with your life. Like, where are you now and where will you be in about 10 years? So she's going to talk to you all about that. It'll give you a little bit more insight once we get her on air. And then, of course, it's the 25th anniversary of Friends, the TV show. And I thought we'd kind of rattle around an idea and take some listener calls on what was the best sitcom show. Was it Seinfeld or Friends? The ultimate battle between the two greatest shows. And I have some interesting thoughts on that. An even more interesting thought is, how about we get the lead singer of the Rembrandts, Danny Wilde, the lead singer of that famous song, you know, I'll be there for you when the rain stops. Take it away, Ben. He's looking
really?
At me in the room.
Yeah, singing.
Ben flies planes. I don't think he sings.
Well, that famous song, I wanted to dive into everything as far as what he thought about the show Friends, how much money he must make from those residuals, which Friends is on every single day. You can't get away from it. And so we're going to talk to him at 3:30. Then at 4, all the way from Scotland, We have former WGN employee Eric Edmonds, who's joining me for a speed edition of Two Dudes, One Disc. Yes, the popular podcast I host here on WGN, where we dive into an album, a classic album, song by song with careful consideration. And we're going to do that at 4 o'clock. And then, of course, we have This Is History, talking to David Schwann later in the night. But right now, my friend Roger Badish, Ben, and I are going to be with you all evening until 5 o'clock. And this is WGN. This is Michael Heidemann in for Dave Plyer. We will be right back. When my friends get together, they get way too high. They'll fix drinks and the world to their Spotify. That should know by now that it's all a front. Welcome back in, everyone. This is WGN Radio. This is your host, Mike Heidemann, who's in all night for the great Dave Plyer. Oh, did I mention that throughout the evening we'll be spinning bumps from by all Chicago music artists? Yes, it's something that I try to do as much as I can when I'm on air to support the local Chicago music scene. I mean, it's so important to keep that alive because we are in such a great city and there's so many amazing artists. So I'm going to be spinning Chicago music throughout the evening. All the music bumps are going to be just those artists that are playing. And right there, we heard the one and only Ryan Pollock with his song Friends. I can't get enough of that song. It's so good. The production levels are so great. And he's actually just a college student. I say just. He's so much more. But he is a college student who goes to Columbia, and he put that together all by himself. I mean, the thought that one day, after all the history of Motown and, you know, hip hop and all these about these huge conglomerate radio industry factions, the fact that you can just sit down with your computer now and make your own song in your bedroom and it sounds that good, it's remarkable. So go pick up his new EP. It's Ryan Pollock. I think he has a full album out. So just search his name, Ryan Pollock Music, online. You can check it out there. We were talking about the idea of fear. And it's very important because, you know, that's something that is stuck on our back throughout our lives. No matter what we go through, there's some kind of fear. And I did something very, very scary for me this week. And I kind of took the plunge. And I'd love to dive into that a little bit. But first, we got to get our good friend on the phone who's been on hold for a little bit. Is your name B.A.? Is that what's going on here? How's it going tonight?
Well, I'm listening to you and having a lovely evening in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah?
And it's good to hear that Roger is there. He's, like, always there.
He is. He said I was the busiest man. He is the busiest man in Chicago.
But he loves it.
Yes, he does. So we were talking about fears. What are your fears?
Yeah, but I was intrigued by how you're going to plunge into your fear.
Oh, you want to hear about how I'm going to plunge into my fear? Well, let me hear yours first, and then I'll dive into that,
well,
okay?
Well, what I was going to say is that I hear that you have a guest upcoming, and I'm going to listen. But I'm talking about maybe anxiety versus fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, when I have anxiety, it's like sometimes I get so sick of being scared that I just run straight into it.
Yes. See, I like that. I like that. What's something that you've done in your life recently that kind of it kind of reflects that?
Well, I'll talk about back in the day, I was a very shy girl. I didn't like talking on the phone. So I got a job with an answering service. Like, so if you're scared of talking to people, just talk to people. Like, what? In that situation, you were prompted as to what to say.
Yes.
And then you learned to say.
Yes.
Tell them, like, all that. Like,
you dove right into it. You dove right into it. And I love that about it. I love it. It's just you
no,
were
you blaze. You blaze straight through.
I like that. And do you feel better that you went through it and now it's over with?
Oh, now they can't shut me up.
Yes. See? I like that a lot.
And
I like
Barbara Streisand has a fear of the stage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? That's not really good for her profession.
Yeah, Barbara Streisand has stage fright.
Mm. I feel like that's something that she just says.
I think that's why she always looks up into the light so that she can't see the people.
Oh, wow. I also heard that she has a mall in her basement.
A what?
A mall in her basement.
Well, that must make it easy to shop.
I think that just has to do with the fact that she has the social anxiety. But that's right.
But when it comes to fear, the thing that I fear the most is being a passenger in a car.
Ooh, how come?
Like, if I can drive, I got this.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're driving, oh, no.
That's a fearful one. I had a friend who would often like they wouldn't be able to go on car rides unless they had Cheez-Its next to them. It was like a comfort food.
Yeah, like oh my, I know. And that's what I'm saying. Like, is it fear or is it anxiety?
Yeah, I love
you know.
Is it fear or is it anxiety? Hey, thank you so much for the call. We really, really appreciate that. I mean, just the thought of fear and anxiety, it surrounds our lives. And we want to see the ways to squash that. Quickly, I know we're going to go to news in 2 seconds. I did want to talk to you because we have a jam-packed show here. I did do something very scary this past week. And I dove into it just not knowing what I was going to expect. It was kind of one of those things where I was thinking to myself and I thought, this is what other people do. This isn't what Michael Heidemann does. This is what other people do. And that was, believe it or not, volunteering. Volunteering to help out other people. Taking time where I'm not going to get paid. I'm not going to know a single person. They're not going to expect anything from me. And I'm not going to expect anything from them. That was very scary to me. And what I did, I went with this great organization called Musicians on Call. I play music, and what this Musicians on Call organization does, they do an amazing, amazing thing. They bring live music to the bedsides of patients in healthcare facilities all over the U.S., and actually did my first night with them. And to be honest, of all the shows that I've ever played, of all the people that I've ever met, I was the most nervous to be in that room with somebody who was going through an illness with their family. They were sick. They might have broken a leg. I went to a rehab facility, so a lot of people were kind of torn up there. And sitting with them, when they're going through the toughest moments in their lives, and looking them in the eyes, and playing them a song, holy smokes, that was the most scared I ever was. And I kept thinking to myself, I'm like, Michael, you know all these songs. And I blanked every single time I walked into those rooms. Because I was just dealing with what do I need to do to make these people's lives better for this quick 5 minutes that I'm going to spend with them. And that was very scary for me. There's a lot of great music organizations out there, though, so I want to dive through some of them. I'll do that throughout the show. But yeah, call in again, 312-981-7200. We're going to be discussing the idea of fear and how to squash it, what your strategies are behind it, and we're going to dive into that. Make you want my home like wolves. Welcome back to WGN Radio. This is your host, Mike Heidemann. That beautiful, beautiful voice and that sound you're hearing is the band Adjacent Cruise from Chicago with their song, Wolves. They actually won the open mic tonight. Congratulations, guys. You did great. Pick up their new album. I think they have a show coming up at Martyrs 2. So we're going to be spinning Chicago musicians all evening long. But right now, we were diving into the idea of fear, how to overcome fear, and there honestly is nothing more fearful right now, especially in Chicago, than the upcoming Bears season. And to tell us more about that, we have the host of The Tailgate Show, Aaron Torricelli. What's going on tonight, Aaron? How are you doing tonight?
Hey, Mr. Heidemann. It is awesome to be here. Thanks so much for having me. And it's great. You know, everything's good. We are on the precipice of a very exciting Bears season, it looks like.
I'm glad that you came in uniform, too. Shoulder pads and everything. You didn't have to do that for us.
I had to. I felt that things might get a little rough. And so, you know, we came prepared.
Yes, I love it. Irreverent, uncensored, uncut Bears talk for hardcore fans every single week on Apple Podcasts. You can pick up The Tailgate Show. Now, you're a lifelong Bears fan. Where did this come from? How did you dive into, you know, your love for the Monsters of the Midway?
It just happened fairly recently. I just, you know, kind of hooked up with a bunch of people on Twitter and started listening to Bears podcast. Of course, Hogan John's being, you know, the great podcast that's here on WGN.
That's right. The one of the best. Adam Hogan and John's, of course.
Yeah, the Adams. They are amazing. So, you know, shows like that really inspired us. And, you know, there's just a real great group of Bears fans. We call it Bears Twitter. That's on Twitter. And a lot of fun podcasts out there. A lot of people just doing, you know, everything you can imagine. And I just got inspired to kind of do my own, you know. And what's great about these days is, you know, you can really do your own thing and put it out there. And so I've been, you know, producing that show and hosting that show. And then I have another show called Halitech Hall with a gentleman named Michael Halitech. And we focus a little bit more on Bears history as well, and then, you know, current events also. So just, you know, fun hobby and another way to kind of scratch my itch for the Bears. And these days, the NFL season really is 24/7, 365. So,
jeez, you do it all. It's very impressive. Yeah. But Aaron, football is back. It's it's fall. This is the season we're all waiting for. Finally, we're not sitting through boring baseball or basketball. It's the football. We're diving into it. What do you think about the upcoming 100th Bears season here in Chicago?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the 100th season of the NFL, and the Bears being the charter franchise of the NFL, of course, founded by George S. Halas. It's exciting, man. This is one of the most exciting Bears seasons, I think, that most Bears fans have seen in their lifetimes, for sure. You know, it's a team that a lot of people have a ton of high expectations for. Obviously, the season last year didn't end the way that everybody wanted.
What? What do you mean it didn't end up the way we didn't want?
Well, there was a little instance of a kick. some people might recall it as the double doink.
by the way, the best slang term I've ever heard in all of sports history.
Yeah, it's it's fun, but it also elicits a huge amount of stomach pain and heartache and sweats. And I'll tell you, even when, you know, just watching a replay of it, it just brings you right back there. And so since that moment when the Bears season, where they were 12-4 and they went to the playoffs and everything was looking like, you know, really exciting, came to a crashing halt. Bears fans have been kind of trapped in that moment, but at least bolstered and buoyed by the fact that it seems that the team should be, you know, in contention, perhaps to win it all this upcoming season. So it's a mixed bag, you know, and the team has taken quite an undertaking of trying to find a new kicker. So it's been interesting.
Bears Packers first game of the season. Should we be afraid?
Should the Bears fans be afraid? Not of the Packers anymore. You know, it's the oldest rivalry in sports. I would say many would agree that it is the greatest rivalry in sports. You know, they have been playing basically for 100 years. And I mean, just to say that is pretty amazing. I mean, when two teams can get together and play that much over the course of time, and it's really a tight series. The Packers lead the Bears in the series all time, 97, 95, and 6. So they've just barely edged us overall, but of late, since 2010, the Packers have pretty much dominated the Bears. So,
yeah.
But recently, and this was actually a game I was at, and last year in December, the Bears were able to beat the Packers in Soldier Field to win the division and, of course, propel themselves to the playoffs. So right now, you could say that the Bears are trending up and, you know, the Packers are in a little maybe area of displacement. They have a new coach. There's a lot of question marks going on with them, perhaps more than there have been in any recent memory. So, no, I don't think the Bears have to be afraid of the Packers. But, you know, anytime they play the Packers, there's a nervousness because there's a guy that plays for the Packers named Aaron Rodgers, and he has ripped the Bears' hearts out more times than I care to remember.
But is he more terrifying with the mustache and denim suit, or on the field?
No, that actually makes him less terrifying. It's fantastic for Bears fans when he does that sort of thing, because we just revel in the goofiness of him off the field. Mm-hmm. Because on the field, he's a stone cold killer. He's an amazing player. He's just has done everything to take the Bears and make them, just fall to his will. But off the field, he's not quite the same, performer. He's a little bit goofy, and so we love it when he does those sort of things, and we have a field day on Twitter and on podcasts making fun of him.
And speaking of, just tell everyone your Instagram real quick. I love the GIFs and all the images you put
sure,
out.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
too.
We have, it's Da Tailgate Show, D like Da Bears. Everyone knows that. And so it's Da Tailgate Show on Instagram and on Twitter, same handle. And yeah, we do, I put together little videos, little fun things, just some, fun stuff to keep myself entertained.
Mm-hmm. Bears season is coming up. We're speaking to Aaron Torricelli from the Tailgate Show. Call in 312-981-7200. Text that same number. We're going to be diving into the Bears season and see what's going to be hitting the midway in a little bit. Right after this break here on WGN Radio.
It's a late night on the lake until you lose time. Yeah, that's country. That's country.
The one and only Ryan Cheverini with that music bump. That name sounds familiar. Yes, that is the co-host of Windy City Live and the guest on my popular web series, Brews and Bands, where we go to local Chicago venues with music artists. And he was the best guest. I mean, talk about the kindest and most genuine guy that there is, Ryan Cheverini, with his song This Is Country. Go and pick it up. It supports a great cause too, and he's just a great guy. Again, this is Michael from WGN Radio. Michael Heidemann in for Dave Plyer. We're talking all things Bears. This is a big season. Last year ended with one of the worst displays of all time, and I think that we're still all recovering from it. With this kicker situation, we're kind of talking about fear a little bit on this show. Should we be afraid of our new kicker? Are we going to finally see the light?
I think so. He's been through the ringer, and the Bears have done a lot to kind of test him. Eddie Pinheiro is the young gentleman's name. This is going to be his first season kicking in the pros. He went to Florida, and so far, he's come a long way. The Bears started out with a ton of kickers, and they whittled them down, and then they had two, and he gave us all quite a moment there on the last preseason game when he shanked the first.
What happened? What was with that? That
wasn't
even
know.
Close.
I mean, it's just Murphy's Law. I mean, it's just life of a Bears fan that he, you just have to have your heart twisted a little bit. Mm-hmm. And but then he went on to make the three field goals after that. So I think we felt better about it. But I mean, any Bears fan would be lying to you if they said that they were going to feel confident about any kick that happens during this season. But at the end of the day, he's our guy and we got to support him.
That's Aaron Torricelli, host of the Tailgate Show, one of the smartest minds as far as the Bears go. I think that there is, besides, of course, Hogan Johns, who are here at the station. It's kind of an interesting season because we are so reliant on our kickers, and you didn't even realize it until last year when all you had to do, you're sitting on the bench the entire game. And you just need to do just one job. You had one job.
One job.
And the fact that he couldn't do that just floored me. And I think it floored all Bears fans. And it's going to be an interesting season. I actually wanted to see if we could pull that clip of the famous double doink. Ben, wow. Can you hit that up for us?
43-yard attempt from the right hash mark. Impossible! And the Eagles run out into the field, but there's still 5 seconds, so they've got to get back. He does it again.
I got to hear double doink.
Al Michaels.
Aaron, you started sweating when that clip was played.
It hurts. It's physically painful. Al Michaels. I mean, you know, he's just got that voice, and you've heard him through so many calls, and it seemed like last year that the Bears, every game it felt like that it was Al Michaels and Collinsworth calling the game, and so they knew the situation. And I mean, and Parkey was not a great kicker during the year. He hit the post in other games, mm-hmm. and so we were afraid. We were afraid going to this game. Mm-hmm. I had already, in my mind, and every show, Hogan Johns, every show, everybody had talked about knowing that this playoff run was going to come down to Parkey at some yeah. point. And it's almost as if we manifested it with our fear, because here it came. And the worst part about it was they iced him. So they called a timeout.
Yeah, that's right.
And he kicked it, and he made it, but it didn't count. And I said, as soon as he made this, oh no, he's not going to make it again. He can't possibly make it again. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful that I was watching the game with my 7-year-old son, because I had to control my emotions and I had to immediately explain to him something positive and fatherly about the situation, because otherwise I probably would have been outside like smashing my own windshield or something crazy. So
well, you're passionate. You're passionate about your team.
Yeah.
We got Mitch Trubisky. He's a very young quarterback. Mm-hmm. Smart guy. He seems to be on the level.
Yep.
Can he lead the Bears to a 2020 Super Bowl?
You know, I think he can. But he's the best part about Mitch is that he's not alone. And he has a great defense. The defense was number one in all of football last year, and there's many things that are pointing towards a repeat of that type of performance.
Mm-hmm.
He has a lot of weapons. He has an amazing coach, Matt Nagy, who is putting him in a great situation to succeed. So, you know, is Mitch Trubisky going to, you know, be a top five quarterback? Is he mm-hmm. going to be Patrick Mahomes? Is he going to throw for 50 touchdowns? No, but he doesn't need to do that to lead this team on a deep playoff run. And at the end of the day, if you get into the tournament, anything can happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what, you know, just as a bystander, we have a lot of listeners out there who, you know, are just the passive Bears fans. What do you need to build a great team? Is it, you need Urlacher in the middle? Do you need Trubisky throwing those touchdowns?
I mean, I think you need it all, you know, and I think what they talk about these days and what coaches talk about is complementary football. Mm-hmm. So the defense and the offense have to all work together. The special teams being the kicker, whether it's Pat O'Donnell punting the ball or now Eddie Pinheiro kicking field goals. It all has to work together. And so if the offense doesn't hold up its end of the deal and the defense constantly has to bail them out or vice versa, the offense is playing from behind, you know, that's what leads to, you know, games where, you know, things are lopsided, things are off, you know, off kilter. And so that's what we want from Mitch this year, is he has to get better. But I think first of all, you need talent, you know, and what the Bears have, and what's most exciting, I think, about this Bears team is this is one of the most talented rosters that the Bears have had possibly ever. There's really depth at every position. And even on the offense, we're not used to having, you know, top flight receivers in Chicago. And honestly, we're not used to having great quarterbacks. And Mitch, even though he, you know, has his issues, he seems to have the tools to mm-hmm. become possibly a great quarterback.
Mm. Who's going to be in if Trubisky goes down?
Well, that's another,
that's another
moment of fear. And so we spent a lot of time this preseason watching the backups, because Nagy doesn't really believe in playing the starters. He wants to keep them safe. So we saw the backup quarterback, who's a guy named Chase Daniel. He's been in the league for 10 years. Really smart guy, really, you know, kind of like a player coach for Mitch.
Okay.
But he is not an athlete in the same way that Mitch Trubisky is. He is limited. He's a little bit on the short side. He did win. He did play a couple games last year, and he won one in Detroit, and they lost one in New York. But you know, it's not going to be a good situation if we don't have Mitch. So we don't want to think about that. that could be another source of fear. But at the end of the day, most teams, if they're forced to play their backup quarterbacks for long stretches, it's not going to go well for them.
You know, Aaron, you're not only the host of the Tailgate Show, you also kind of run a restaurant, a very popular restaurant here in Chicago. How do you deal with that kind of stress? The Bears, restaurant. You know, do you have a stress ball at home? Is there a pillow you scream into at night?
No, I mean, it's fun. I am lucky enough to be the manager for a living of Bill's Bar and Burger. Of course, you host the amazing open mic on Saturdays.
Oh, yeah, I love that spot.
Yeah, it's a great good one.
Night, yes.
So that pays the bills and allows me to have fun goofing around and doing podcasts. But I wouldn't say it's stressful or fearful or anything like that. You just have to keep your eyes on the prize, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
Aaron Torricelli, The Tailgate Show. You should check it out everywhere you can find your podcast. We have a few minutes left here, Aaron. I wanted to dive into a quick rapid-fire question for you to just get your thoughts on it. As my go-to person for the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the most dangerous team of the NFL right now? Who should be looking out for?
I think you have to look at the Chiefs. With Patrick Mahomes, he is probably the most prolific offensive player in the league right now. So Chiefs are, and they just made a big pickup today of LeSean McCoy. So they're a hot team right now.
Who's going to be the worst team in the NFL?
I would say probably the Dolphins. The Dolphins
been the
also
worst team for years.
They also kind of shed a lot of players today. They were involved in some trades and some interesting things. So a lot of people are predicting they're tanking for draft picks. So they're probably
I like what you did there. Did they get stuck in the tuna net?
Yeah, exactly.
Man, that's not good. No. All right, should we still be fearful of Tom Brady?
You know, we have to be. As long as he is suiting up, we really, really have to be. The guy seems to be ageless, and yeah, as long as he's putting on a uniform, you got to be worrisome about him.
Yeah, isn't it crazy how he just doesn't seem to age at all, and like no matter what it comes down to, he could be down by like 40 points, and there still is a way somehow.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great games of the year last year was the Bears loss, and the Bears played fantastic against the Patriots in Soldier Field, and the guy just, he has finds a way. It's unbelievable. Jeez.
Favorite Bear of all time?
I would have to say Urlacher. I'm wearing his jersey, and he's the guy that obviously played since 2000, and he's the guy that kind of occupies the most space in my mind in terms of a player that I watched and just admired.
All right, how about this? Going into the Packers game, what are you going to give for the score?
I think the Bears are going to show up, and I think they're going to play really well, and I'm looking for 34-20 Bears.
Aaron Torricelli, The Tailgate Show. You got to check it out. Aaron, where can we find it?
You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, iHeartRadio. You can find it on YouTube. So look out for it. The Tailgate Show. Thanks so much.
Aaron, thank you so much for joining us here on WGN. It's going to be a big season. Who knows what's going to happen? I mean, if you need to know anything about the Bears, go and check out his podcast. It's going to be a really rocky road, but hopefully we don't get any more double doinks. Welcome back to WGN Radio. This is your host, Mike Heidemann, in for Dave Plyer. It's great to be with you all. We just had a great conversation about the Chicago Bears and what they're up to. Now, the Bears are kind of one team that would have been really, really good maybe 10 years ago, and then today they're kind of rebuilding, readjusting, trying new things. And that's what our next guest is going to be speaking about a little bit. Taylor Ledden, an amazing author from Chicago, just came out with a brand new book, The Time Capsule Journal, which kind of looks into the life of our past, where we were going, and then where we will end up. It's an idea of, well, let's just bring Taylor in to tell us all about it. What's going on, Taylor? Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's great to see you. So why did you dive into something so, I don't know, ethereal, interesting? You know, life is a very, very, very special thing, and we change tenfold. Like, I was definitely not the same person I was 10 years ago.
Right.
I've changed in leaps and bounds. So what was the inspiration behind this book?
Well, I started doing time capsule journals when I was in high school. It was something I kind of just started by accident, and I thought it was a really cool idea once I started doing it every year. So basically the concept is I take a journal and I write a million things in it, and then I put it away for 10 years and mm-hmm. I can't look at it. So then I can go back and see how I've progressed as a person. And that's what I wanted to share with other people. So I created something that was kind of a template for that, and they can answer prompts. They'll answer half of it now, and then they don't have to do 10 years. I know that's a lot to ask of someone. So they can do, you know, 1, 3, whatever they want to do, and then just answer questions that are similar to what they answered before and see how they've changed.
Yeah, so you're setting yourself in stone as who you were maybe when you were 21, and then coming back to it maybe even the next year or so. It's a great idea. Yeah, I mean it's and the book came out very, very well. I love the cover and everything. And you also do a journalistic blog called The Tidbit. Could you tell us a little bit about that too?
Yes, so that is basically an entertainment website. I have freelanced for a variety of different kinds of journalistic websites, and I wanted to do something entertainment focused because that's my primary area of interest, mm-hmm. especially nostalgic pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to kind of take the reins and do something myself where I can set up interviews with people that I want to interview, like Tony Danza. So
yeah, because you're a child of pop culture. You know it very well. In fact, actually, more so than most people that I know. You are an expert at pop culture.
Yeah, I don't know that that's something to be proud of or not, but it is what it is at this point.
But I love it. I love it. It kind of goes hand in hand. Where can we find The Tidbit?
The Tidbit is thetidbit.online.
Ooh, it's a great website.
Thank you.
The Tidbit was taken?
It wasn't. I don't know. WordPress just assigned me to .online, and I ran with it.
Well, I love it. Well, let's talk a little bit more about your book. I wanted to bring in Roger and Ben for this segment because it's interesting to look at yourself when you were dealing with yourself in the past. I mean, I know that when I was – let's think about this. Let's all do like a 10-year mark. So I was, let's say, 20. When I was 20 years old, where was I? I was probably a student at DePaul University. I didn't know what to do with my life. I was in education. I was an education major looking to become a teacher. I knew that I wanted to do radio in the back of my mind, but I didn't know how to get there. And then now, smash cut to living 10 different places.
Look at you.
I know. I've become such a different person. Roger, where were you 10 years ago?
Where was I 10 years ago? I was teaching. I was still at Chicago Vocational Career Academy. We had won a couple of student Emmy Awards on the national scene. I was very successful as a teacher. My students were learning a lot of great things, and I was extremely happy, and I was working here on Friday nights.
Man, look at that. How about
I think
you?
That was 10, yeah, that was 10 years ago, yeah.
How about you, Ben? Where were you 10 years ago?
Oh, man.
I love how we all start with, oh, man. Yeah. Oh, geez, those are some tough times.
While Roger's talking, I'm doing the math. I was coaching at that point. I was a full-time coach for club gymnastics and high school gymnastics at that time.
Wait a minute. You were a coach for gymnastics?
Yeah. You didn't know
really?
That?
No, I did not.
Oh, so, yeah.
Can you do a backflip?
Yeah. Steph kept trying to make me do one in the office, and I kept telling her no.
Can you do one, though?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Ben, yeah. You do it all, man. You and Roger are, like, unearthing your stories as some of my favorite radio, is finding out how Roger used to work at the Playboy Mansion at one time. Ben was a gymnastics coach. Maybe they worked together at the Playboy Mansion. I don't even know. It's the way it is.
I don't think there was much tumbling involved in that, but you never know. You never know.
Flexibility, but no tumbling.
All right. Well, let's... Let's keep it clean, guys. We have a lady present.
Yeah.
Taylor, you do so much with your life. In fact, you were once even noted as a prominent woman in journalism by Ariana Huffington's Thrive Global. What was Thrive Global?
Thrive Global is a kind of a sister publication to the Huffington Post, I believe.
Wow. So you've been in journalism most of your life. Is this your first book?
It is.
And then,
yes.
And was it you know, the idea of fear was kind of our thread through the night. And again, if you want to call in,
I love talking about that.
Yeah, it's we had a great call that kind of decided the thought process behind: is it fear or is it anxiety? Is it they go hand in hand so mm-hmm. well, but how do we release that kind of anxiety and fear? And again, call in 312-981-7200. Or if you don't feel like calling in, I get it. It's a scary topic. You can text in too. Just let us know what you think about that kind of process. But writing a book, that must be very, very fearful. You must be very scared to dive into something like that, because you write the book. It's out there. It's out there, man.
Yeah, I guess this was kind of just dipping my toe in the water a bit, because really all I did was write prompts and put it in a book. So I didn't, you know, get as deep as maybe I one day will. But
stop selling yourself short. It's an awesome book.
Well, okay. Thank you.
Again, 312-981-7200. We have somebody who asked the name of the book, and it's The Time Capsule Journal, a creative journal for now and later. And I'd love to, you know, take a break and then dive into some of these prompts, and maybe we can get Roger and Ben to answer some of these as well, because I know you got some prepared. Are you all set?
Yeah.
All right, great. Let's do it. This is Mike Heidemann in for Dave Plyer here on WGN Radio. We're speaking with Taylor Ledden about her brand new book. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
So hold on for one more summer. We'll go back to that place. Make good on the promises we lost along the way.
Welcome back to WGN, everyone. This is your host, Mike Heidemann, in for Dave Plyer. We're playing Chicago music artists throughout the evening to support our local Chicago music scene. I think it's very important because we live in such an amazing city, so many great artists, and that was one of my faves. The Early Sixes with One More Summer. Matt, who's the lead singer of that band, is a great person. We actually played a few shows together, so shout out, Matt. You're making amazing music, and I love that Taylor guitar you play with. Speaking of Taylors, we have one here in the studio right now with us. Author, singer, songwriter, so much more, Taylor Ledden, who has the new book, The Time Capsule Journal. It takes a look into our lives, the past, and how we are recreating ourselves almost. At least that's the way that I took it when I was looking at it. This book is full of prompts. I should turn on your microphone. I suppose that's important.
Well, you can just do all the talking.
It's my book now.
Yeah.
So you have a list of prompts here in this book, and I find it very inspiring because, you know, you're telling people this is your moment. Like, what reflecting on memories is kind of my favorite thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
We had a long conversation about Nintendo games the other day.
We did, yes.
And looking back at those, and how it just unearths all these other memories. You can see yourself sitting with your brother or sister, and your dad is screaming for you to get off your butt and do your homework. So it's kind of cool. And you wanted to just help us like kind of weave through some of these prompts. So do you have one ready for us?
I do. First, I have to say it's still sad that you don't know Aladdin on Super Nintendo.
And I think that game does not exist.
It does, and it's fantastic.
Ben, does Aladdin exist on Super Nintendo? You look like you had some thoughts on that.
I try to forget those memories, but it does exist.
Thank you.
Ben was doing the splits while he was playing Aladdin at that time. Ben, what was your favorite Super Nintendo game?
Oh, a Super Nintendo?
Yeah.
I have to go classic Mario.
Okay. Yeah. I feel it.
We agreed on that.
See, okay, so let's unearth some more memories real quick with some of these prompts.
Okay, so one of my favorite questions to ask people is, what is the best concert or play that they've ever seen? But in conjunction with this book, since you're going to be doing this in the future, who would you want to see perform by the time your future self reads this book?
Who would you want to see perform by the time you read this book? 312-981-7200. Call or text in. Taylor has a book to give away. It's a brand spanking new copy of The Time Capsule Journal. 312-981-7200. We're going to take your calls as well as our own group here and dive into these questions, because I find it fascinating. So, Taylor, well, how about we'll go with Ben first. Ben, who would you want to see in concert?
Oh, man.
Yeah,
see, you're hitting me with all these like hard questions tonight. I thought this was gonna be an easy show.
Yeah. You're back
wait a
in
minute.
School. You're back
I mean,
in
these,
school.
These yeah. aren't math problems, Ben.
He was an education major.
Yeah, wait
He's
a minute.
Asking you the hard questions.
Hard questions. Yeah. Well, like, what's your favorite Super Nintendo game? You can make up something.
The first question was a question of fact, if a game exists.
Yeah, that's true.
He's like, oh, man.
That's true.
I don't know. Aladdin is...
All right, so we're talking concert that I'd want to see before
yes.
I read the book. You know what? Just because they're coming to town soon, and I've never seen them in concert, ZZ Top.
Okay.
Nice, ZZ Top. Yeah. Oh, man, the Gibbs brothers.
Yeah.
Some of the greatest beards in rock and roll. How about you, Roger? Who would you want to see?
I have to be alive, right?
Yes.
I can't go back in history?
Because in this book, you need to write down your answers later on and look back at them.
Oh.
So, yes.
All right, so here's my dream concert, which I doubt will ever happen, even though it came close one time. They were only missing one person. I would like to see Ringo Starr and Paul McCartney and the sons of George Harrison and John Lennon all play together and play Beatles hits and their own hits.
Man, I thought you were going to say Monkees hits.
Nah, I've had enough of the Monkees. But that's what I would like to say. I've always had the dream concert that it would be like, you know, all along the lakefront, all along the beaches, you would have the Stones, the Beatles, and the Who.
Oh, come on, Roger.
Playing for like a whole weekend.
I love your answers, man. That's kind of my dream concert, too. Now I got to reevaluate mine. Yeah. And I'm going to do that while we take the call from Tracy. Tracy, welcome to the show. What's going on?
Hey. I have a question. I want to know, can I get your book at any store?
It's available on Amazon right now. So if you look up the Time Capsule Journal or Taylor Ledden on Amazon, you can find it there.
And I want to ask a couple of questions. What concert would I want to see?
Yeah, Tracy, what concert would you want to see and write about?
Stevie Wonder.
Oh, me too.
Man, Stevie Wonder. Great.
Yes.
Great choice. I love Stevie Wonder. I got to see him a week after Michael Jackson passed away, and he did a whole medley of Michael Jackson songs, and it was the most That's beautiful so thing that I've cool. ever seen. Tracy, thank you so much for the call. That was a great, great answer. Stevie, my man. Man, that's a great answer. All right, for me, I don't know who I'd want to see. I've seen a lot of great people. I think Dolly Parton. Would be a
Dolly
fun
Parton.
One to go and see.
A
yeah,
9 to 5.
A lot of 9 to 5. All right. Do you have any more for us?
Let's see. There's a whole section about each day of a month. You write one thing that you're grateful for,
mm-hmm.
so you can pick something that happened that day or just something in general. So, what's something that happened today that you're grateful for?
Oh, I've lived most of my life trying to be as grateful as I can be because I find it very important to you know. Just love on the little things. And again, 312-981-7200. Join in the conversation. We're giving away one of Taylor's book, The Time Capsule Journal. But yeah, things that I'm grateful for. It was a beautiful day today, even though we had a little bit of rain here in Chicago. But I was able to host that open mic over at in River North. And I think that getting to talk to these people and seeing somebody who was nervous, getting on stage for the first time, was pretty special. And then I had a friend who has always wanted to play piano, never took the option or the chance to do it. And tonight she's like, screw it. I'm going to go and I'm going to play a song on the piano.
Nice.
Natasha, great job. So yeah, that would be mine. What about you, Taylor? What would be one thing you're grateful for?
I got to see Kenny Loggins today.
What?
So that was... That
Ben just
awesome.
Lost his mind in the producer's booth.
I did. I mean, he only did so many songs for one of the greatest movies ever made.
Top Gun, Footloose, Caddyshack.
Top Gun.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Ben's a pilot, by the way, so I think that's
why really?
He kind of like loves that movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. So, Ben, what about you? What are you grateful for?
For today? I mean, it's 3 a.m., so we're pretty short on the time here. So if I was going with anything for today, I'd have to be grateful for Michael Heideman for bringing me an outstanding cheeseburger.
Yes!
Tonight, because, yeah, that hit the spot, man.
Oh, man. I'm grateful for you for eating that and enjoying it, because I came in with a whole bucket full of burgers.
Where's my burger?
You want a burger?
No.
I have some in the producer's booth. You can take one right away. It's a burger kind of night.
Yeah, I'm giving away orders to go here.
From the 815, we have a great text that came in. They'd want to see The Who, and that's from Carrie. Oh, The Who would be so... See, it's crazy to think that now we're at an age where people that we've grown up listening to, the heart of rock and roll, the 1970s and 60s, they're all kind of going away. This is like a, we're losing those golden musicians. I mean,
yeah.
Do you think we're going to look back, and being a music guy myself and going to, you know, 1,000 concerts throughout my years, do you think we're going to look back at our oldies today and be like, oh, put on the new Lord song when I'm like 9 years old? Oh, is that Ariana Grande? I remember when.
I hope not.
She's. It's just. But yeah, I love that. The Who, the Beatles. Oh, those are my jams. You had one in here that I found very. I don't know. I wanted to see what the answers would be. Who are some of your heroes back in the day, and who are some of your heroes now?
Some of my heroes. I would have to say my brother is my hero.
Mm-hmm.
He's my favorite person in the world. Just anybody who's out there helping people, honestly, yeah, out of the goodness of their hearts. Anybody can be a hero.
Hulk Hogan?
Yes.
I'm trying to get some specifics. No, that's beautiful. Yeah, I love my brother, too. I think that would be my hero as well. Ben, what about you, man?
Again, tough questions, but...
Oh, man.
I know.
heroes.
Actually, I've been evaluating that one lately, so I'm kind of glad you brought that up. In recent thoughts, and I've always thought this, but I've never really vocalized it, my uncle,
mm-hmm.
He served in Vietnam and, you know, came back and dealt with a lot of the stuff that happened at that time. But the fact that he went over and did what he did at that point in our country's history just blows my mind. So he's been a hero of mine.
That's really important. I mean... I didn't know I was sitting with such genuinely good people right now. Nobody was like, you know, Mick Jagger.
I mean, he's up there.
He is. 312-981-7200. I want to hear some of the listeners. What do you guys think about who's your hero? What are your thoughts about who you were at one point in your life when you were maybe 20 or something and who you are now? I mean, it's interesting to see where your life takes you. And I really like that. So this book is amazing, by the way. You can find it on Amazon.
Thank you.
The Time Capsule Journal. Taylor, what's on the horizon for you? What's the next books you're going to dive into?
There might be a volume 2.
Wow.
I don't know. We'll see how this one goes. There's always a million ideas going on in my head. None of them are usually good ideas, but every once in a while something sticks and I run with it. So we'll see. So I got to focus on the tidbit right now and then we'll see what happens.
So you as a first-time writer, by the way, there's a lot of people out there who are, you know, sitting on at their desk with their quill and feather.
Sure.
And they're thinking, I want to write a book too. I have all these great ideas. Michael, Taylor, what can I do to make that happen? What advice can you give them?
Just write them down. Just start writing and don't stop until you're tired and worry about going back and editing everything later. Just, you know, act as if no one else is going to see it. Mm-hmm. Just write it for yourself and then evaluate whether or not you want to share it with somebody.
Did you kind of give this to a person that you knew before you put it out into the world, or did you just go, hey, I think I'm ready to get this published?
Well, because I started doing this about, you know, 10 years ago, I figured now is probably the time to either do it or just forget about it. So
yes.
I had enough time to keep it to myself and then decide to share it with people. So I kind of just sat down and created it into a book and then told everybody about it.
Mm-hmm. That's it. See, that's what I love. You were able to squash your fear, and that's what we were talking about earlier in the show. You finally said, screw it, I'm going to just make this happen. And I love that. I love that you took one day where you thought, hey, I have all these writings from 10 years ago. You know, it's time to just shake it up a little bit and make this happen. So that's truly inspiring, and I'm glad that you did that and shared your thoughts with the world.
Thank you. Yeah, and there's something in here about stepping out of your comfort zone, challenging people to do that. So that's my example of stepping out of my comfort zone.
I actually had that page penned down.
Did you?
Yeah, we'll have to dive into that next time you come on the show.
Sounds good.
All right. Taylor, where can we find your work? Where can we find you? How can people get in contact with you?
So you can go to taylorledden.com or to thetidbit.online, and then the Time Capsule Journal is on Amazon.
Wonderful. And again, if you want to get Taylor's book, we're going to give one copy away tonight. Just give us a call. We'll take caller number 3 to give away Taylor's book. It's a great read. It's a great way to reflect on what you are doing with your life and where you're going. And I thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back, to everyone, to WGN Radio. It's great to be with you in your earbuds, in your car, your smart speaker, wherever you're listening to us. That's, again, a Chicago artist, a great band called Eddie and the Arsons, and the song Go Away. I like the punk vibe of that, huh? Ben, you've been curating these throughout the night, right?
Trying to.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Yeah, so the best part about living in Chicago is the music, so we're going to be doing that throughout the night, just Chicago music artists. And yeah, great job, Eddie and the Arsons. We're speaking to Taylor Ledden. She was nice enough to stay a few more minutes because there's something very important that we have to discuss.
Yes.
There's a 25th anniversary of something that is upon us, and I thought we should dive into it with two experts here on the hit show Friends, which is 25 years in the making. Yes.
Wow.
And believe it or not, it's not just on Netflix. It's everywhere, on TV. Just there's a massive amount of people who adore this show. And then recently online, I saw that there was this kind of debate or a battle, believe it or not. And it was Friends versus Seinfeld. What is the greatest sitcom of all time? And I think that this is a time when we need to open up those floodgates. We're going to let listeners decide and vote on what is the best sitcom, Friends or Seinfeld. It's a very important question.
That's a tough one.
And we got to find the answers. I only say this because we have an interview coming up in a few minutes with the one and only Danny Wilde of the Rembrandts.
What?
Yeah, and believe it or not, the lead singer of the hit song I'll Be There For You, the Friends theme song.
Wow.
And Taylor, I asked that man what he thought about the great Friends debate of Friends versus Seinfeld. And his answer, ladies and gentlemen, might shock you. So there's a little tease for you to come up with that interview that's going to happen in a few minutes with Danny Wilde from the Rembrandts. He's a new album out, so stick around for that. But let's dive into it, everybody. 312-981-7200. Friends versus Seinfeld. What is the best show? Taylor, why do you think Friends is the best show?
Well, I think watching Friends growing up, that's what I always aspired to be, was, you know, to have this close-knit group of people that you're going through life together, and they're somehow all ridiculously successful, although they never seem to go to work, but they have these great apartments, and, you know, it made life seem like you don't have to put that much effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my life turned out more like Seinfeld because I'm a very cynical person. And
and you hang out with a guy named Kramer who just pops into your apartment and steals your food every once in a while?
Yeah, pretty
I get
much.
You.
Yeah.
I get you. And Ben, you said you liked the show Friends as well. What was the draw for you?
Joey. I mean,
Joey.
It is Joey.
You liked him. He was just kind of like the wild card
of
the group.
Yeah, just that oddball, you know, like the, you know, speak before you think mentality.
No, I feel you. I feel you. Now, for me, and I'm pretty sure our engineer, Dan Long, I think we had this conversation briefly. We got to go with Seinfeld all the way. It's one of the greatest shows of all time. There's not a single episode of Seinfeld that I don't enjoy thoroughly. But there are many episodes of Friends where I'm just like, all right, we get it. You were on a break. Leave it alone.
That should be the real debate. Were they on a break or were they not?
Don't even get me started on that, Taylor. We'll be here all night. We can't do that. But yeah, Seinfeld versus Friends. What do you think? We got a call right here, a texter who just chimed in. They think Seinfeld, and that's from the 815. So thanks again for that text. And oh, wait, 847 says Friends. Is Ooh. There a battle in the suburbs
oh,
right now?
Oh, man.
Who,
we need a tiebreaker.
Who's going to decide it? Well, how about this? I have a little scientific data for y'all. How about that?
Oh.
To decide who... I mean, we got to get analytical if we're going to go
sure.
into this.
Yeah.
Because it's purely subjective. I mean, on a rainy day,
yeah.
you want to watch either Friends or Seinfeld. Anything as long as it's not Big Bang Theory, in my
Agreed.
Opinion. Jeez.
Yes.
What happened to sitcoms? Right?
Nothing good.
No.
That's why we live in the past.
So here, I'll put a little trivia questions for you guys before getting to the interview with Danny Wilde from the Rembrandts. Who had the biggest audience for their finales, Friends or Seinfeld?
Seinfeld.
Ben?
I'm going to actually have to go with Seinfeld on that one.
Oof. And you are both correct. Ding, ding, ding. 1998 Seinfeld, 76.3 million people. Friends finale, 52.5.
Wow.
Big gap there, huh? All right. How about the IMDb rating for Friends or Seinfeld? What do you think?
Seinfeld.
You think Seinfeld's going to beat them?
Yeah.
Ben?
I'd have to go with Friends on that one.
All right. The answer is Friends. 9.0 versus 8.9.
That's crazy.
I feel like we should have some Seinfeld, like the old beep bop bass line in the background. Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum. We got another text here from the 312. Neither are the best of all time. However, Seinfeld is way better by far. You know what? Hey, I agree with
respect,
you. Seinfeld rules. I think that's one of my favorite shows. I mean, think about it. Jerry, Kramer, Elaine, George?
No, George.
Yeah.
The Summer of George.
Who's the best character on Friends?
Chandler?
Okay.
I think I just relate the most to Chandler.
So you're going to put Chandler versus George. George will win all day.
Oh, sure.
I mean, come on. He bites into a piece of cheese like it's an apple.
No, it's no contest. No contest.
Didn't Chandler have a monkey?
Was Ross.
Oh, that was Ross. That's right. That's true.
Are you even a true fan, Ben?
No. I told you this off air.
All right, let's dive into this real quick. So Seinfeld was slightly older than Friends. You know, they had a different kind of lifestyle, too. Friends was, you know, Joey was in the city, and he was an actor. Ross was an up-and-coming teacher. Rachel, what was your job again? She was like a designer or something like that?
Yeah, she worked in fashion. She was a buyer, I believe.
Mm.
Personal shopper kind of situation.
Yeah, that I know.
From the 317, I love that people are chiming in right here. And this is going to be the big decider. So get your texts in because we don't want to crown the wrong winner.
That's right.
I mean, who knows what's going to happen? Jerry Seinfeld's probably listening right now. He's like with his fingers crossed on the edge of his seat. Ross Geller's probably eating a bowl of chili or something like that, thinking, what are they going to do?
Most likely.
WGN is going to take on this battle. This is huge.
Yeah.
Seinfeld, baby, from the 317. And that we sound great. Well, thank you very much. I think that you sound great.
Wow.
I'm assuming
nice.
That you do. So Seinfeld versus Friends. I'd love to hear some more of your thoughts. So give us a call, 312-981-7200. Taylor, what was your favorite episode of Friends?
My favorite episode of Friends is the one where no one's ready to go to. Ross has some sort of gala where he's giving a speech. They're all supposed to go and... no one's ready.
Ben, you're shaking your head. Is that your favorite episode as well?
It's not my favorite, but that's definitely a good one.
Oh, that's good.
Mine is when Joey speaks French.
See, okay, I get it. Those are nice, like, watered-down comedic premises.
Yeah.
But then again, what about the one where George, he goes out and he tries to get fired and he becomes a bodysuit man? And then everyone enjoys body... See, you're going to get bigger belly laughs from Seinfeld. Or the one where Kramer, he puts on the Peterman bus tour because he's the real Peterman. And listeners, tell me if I'm wrong. Have you ever laughed harder than when you're sitting there watching Kenny Rogers Roaster's Chicken and Seinfeld and Kramer need to switch apartments and the red light beam is going through his window so he can't even sleep? I could talk about these all night.
You're making a lot of good points.
Thank you very much. This is why this is a debate, and I feel like I'm the only one passionate about this topic.
No, I will say I've been watching Friends for a lot longer, but I think that Seinfeld is a better show.
Wow.
I've never said that out loud.
Did I just sway your opinion that easy? I'm going to count that as a win for me.
Okay, congrats.
All right, so how about Golden Globe nominations? Wins for Seinfeld and wins for Friends. Ben, what do you think? Who takes the cake?
All right, that one is a tough one. I'm going to go with Friends on that one.
Okay, Taylor?
I'm going to say Friends because there's more of them, so there's more likelihood that they would have won.
Oof.
The numbers game.
Okay, you're exactly right. It is a numbers game. Seinfeld nominated 15 times, won 3. Friends nominated 10 times, won 1. Just 1.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that surprises me.
I know.
Wow.
How can I? Do you need to be consoled right now? Because
I mean,
of
I'm just
your friends?
Baffled.
All right. How about this? This speaks to the Netflix generation, by the way, right here with this stat. And this is, I give friends credit for, you know, tying people together. If you're a young person and you want to see a good show that's just, you want to fall asleep to something, I get it. Friends is going to be your good show because I got to stay awake when I'm watching Seinfeld. This is too good. Facebook likes Friends versus Seinfeld. Who wins? Taylor?
Friend.
Ben?
Seinfeld.
Ooh! Seinfeld. 5 million likes.
Good for Seinfeld.
Friends? 19 million likes.
Good for me, then.
Not even close. Well, you know what, everybody? We're going to take a dive into the man himself who could settle this decision, kind of right this wrong, settle the score. And that's Danny Wilde, the lead singer of the Rembrandts, who wrote the theme song to Friends. What did he think? And how much money did he truly make from that beautiful, beautiful theme song? That's all coming up next. Again, call in 312-981-7200. We're here till 5 a.m. In for Dave Plyer. This is your host, Mike Heideman. We'll be back with that interview right after this. Hey, welcome back into WGN Radio. I'm your host, Mike Heideman. It's been over 18 years since the duo Phil Solom and Danny Wilde have put out an album. Now they've picked up their guitars again for a brand new Rembrandts album titled Via Satellite. We've got Danny Wilde on the phone right now. What's going on? Why the long wait, Danny?
Well, you know, I mean, we don't rush it. We're just taking our time.
I totally understand. Yeah, 18 years since Lost Together came out. What have you been up to since the release of the last album?
Well, you know, we've been gigging and stuff. We've been writing. We write all the time. We record all the time. We just haven't really felt that inspired to release anything, to be honest with you. It didn't feel like the time was right. And until we, you know, kind of had this last writing session about a year and a half ago where there was a spurt of creativity, and we had three brand new songs, and we said, wow, you know, this feels right again. So mm-hmm. We went digging through our pile of songs that we had finished, some finished, some unfinished, and we just ended up putting it together with the goal of putting out an album. And I mean, I was shocked, I think, as was Phil, when we realized that it had been 18 years. It just didn't seem possible.
So
it's not like we ever went away, to us, anyway. I mean, we're always, you know, working on something.
Exactly. And you and Phil must be still playing music together, like on the weekends and stuff. But what's the difference between you and Phil just jamming, and then now you're like, hey, you know, maybe we should put these songs to paper and put them to a disc?
Well, I think you have to step back and realize that you have a lot of music and it deserves to get out there. Phil lives in, throughout our career, he's always lived, you know, we've always lived 2,500 miles apart from each other. I live in L.A. Mm-hmm. Phil lives in, almost throughout our whole career, he lives in Minneapolis, and now he lives in Nashville. So it's not like we really sit around and jam every weekend or, you know, a couple of days a week. We send each other ideas back and forth through space via satellite, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of look at what we have, and sort of like putting a puzzle together, we assemble our music.
So is that the inspiration for the name then? Because you put a lot of your music through via satellite?
Yeah, it is, really. It is, yeah. You know, back in the old days, we could have said via cassette or via snail mail, I guess it would have been.
So let's dive into that for a second. You put out Lost Together in 2001, and so much has changed in the music industry over the last few years. Exponentially, I think that streaming music and the iPod even were at its infancy back then. What's the biggest changes you guys have seen over the last 18 years in the music industry?
Definitely the digitization of music and it being just at your fingertips, anything you want. I mean, you know, we all used to have record collections and CD collections, and you know, from a physical standpoint, you know, you don't really need it anymore, although I do miss it. That's why we printed vinyl for the new album. You know, it has the all the lyrics and the liner notes and big, beautiful 12x12 cover. But, yeah, it's just a whole different beast out there now, you know, from royalties to, or lack of royalties to, you know, billions of people hearing your stuff and how to get it out to people. It's just, it's a whole new game you have to learn how to play.
Yeah, I love the fact that you're putting out a vinyl too, because it's been too long since you could really hold a CD or like a great album and look through those photos. And I remember reading all the lyrics and being like, what do they mean behind this? And all the like old backstage photos. So that's cool that you did that. Did you set an intention to kind of keep it, I don't want to say this, but to keep it old school in that way?
Yeah, I mean, it was, the label that we're signed to, Bluey Lawn, is very artist-driven, and a lot of their artists, you know, they play a lot, do a lot of shows, and they and vinyl is like something that is having a resurgence, like at concerts. You know, you can sit and sign them for the fans, and as you will, I mean, it could a T-shirt or a CD as well. But I don't know, there's just something charming about vinyl, and so we did our first run is a limited edition orange colored vinyl of, I think, 500 copies. So if you get your hands on that one, you're lucky. After that, they're all going to be just regular old black vinyl.
I love it. I love it. So go and check out that orange vinyl. You need to get the collector's edition, I guess. So the cool thing I love about this album is you still have that great, great California pop sound. All the songs are just the lyrical harmonies that you guys use and the way that you kind of just, it sets you in a good groove. Like, this is a great album to listen to on the road when you're hanging out with your friends. It puts you in a happy place. Now, how did somebody from Maine get that kind of vibe around them? What kind of music scene did you grow up with?
Well, I was the youngest of five kids. When I was born, my oldest sister was 18 years old. So, mm-hmm. You know, good Catholic family, and then all the way down to, you know, little Danny. So I got to, and there was always music playing in the house, so I got to listen to not only music from my generation, but prior to that, I mean, you know, all the 50s music, the 40s music that my parents were listening to. And I think it had a profound influence on me. I was doing stuff at eight, 9, and 10 years old. I had already seen the Beatles twice.
Oh my gosh.
You know, the Doors, the Supremes, Jimi Hendrix. It's like I was exposed to to artists and music that I don't feel like other kids my age were. Mm-hmm. So it really kind of all manifests in the Rembrandts, you know, just the love of harmonies, a love of melody. That's what I bring to it.
Yeah.
And Phil the same way. His dad was a jazz guitar player. He was turned on to guys like Carl Perkins, Les Paul, you know, Chet Atkins is his favorite. You know, his guitar hero is Chet Atkins. So what does that tell you?
I love it. You know, you were talking about vinyl and the importance of it and everything. And growing up, what was that vinyl that your parents or your brother or sister might have put on where you're thinking, this is something that I could do with my life?
Well, gosh, what I remember... it was an Elvis song. I think it was Return to Sender.
Oh,
and
classic.
I don't know if that was post Beatlemania or right before that, or, you know, maybe like Jailhouse Rock or something like that. I just felt like she was a dietitian at a retirement home that was about a block and a half up from my house. And I remember getting my friends together, and we would go play at the old folks' homes and put on Beatle records, and I'd have a tennis racket, and we'd just mime to the whatever records we were playing, the Beatles records. And so one Christmas, I ended up getting a guitar for, you know, a cheap swap meet guitar, and I just kept at it and kept at it. And before you know it, I mean, it's like I'm in it, so...
Wow.
Yeah. That's what happens to guys like us and girls.
Yeah, it's an incredible thing. I mean, if you have that passion built inside of you, it's interesting. And it's because what did your dad do?
My dad was an auto mechanic.
So a dietitian and an auto mechanic, and then they just birthed this amazing musician who goes on to write these incredible songs that are interlaced in popular culture.
My dad could play a badass harmonica.
Oh, nice.
You know, I mean, it wasn't like John Mayall or Stevie Wonder. It was more like, I don't know, She'll Be Coming Around the Mountain When She Comes, you know,
yeah,
with the knee slapping. And I love the harmonica because of that.
Oh, see, that's amazing. It's things like that. I remember when I was growing up, my dad told me, he's like, if you could play the guitar or especially like the piano, you'll always have some friends around you because you can just, you know, start a party with that sound.
True. And if you're in high school or junior high and you learn how to play bass, you'll always be in a band because nobody wants to play bass.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
It's true, man. Everyone wants to be the singer, the drummer, or the guitar player. So, they're a dime a dozen. But if you play bass, especially if you own a rig, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. I was playing every day in another band because of the fact that I don't think I was doing it because I thought it was smart. I just always loved the bass.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look at what came from it. I mean, it's a genius idea to play that in the shadows kind of instrument, I suppose.
Right. You're holding down the fort.
Yeah, the backbone almost.
Exactly.
So again, total pleasure speaking to you. They got the new album coming out, Via Satellite, the new Rembrandt's album, 18 years. It's crazy. Now, believe it or not, everybody, our good friend Danny not only has this new album coming out, but he's kind of known for this other song. I don't know if you heard about it. It's called I'll Be There For You. Yeah, the Friends theme song. One of the most famous songs that is interlaced in our culture for the last 20-plus years. Now, when you were penning down that song and writing it with the Rembrandts, how did you know it was going to have that weight? I mean, what was your thought process of just, okay, this, I have a buddy, he wants a song for this new TV show, I don't know if it's going to take off. What was going through your head at that moment?
Well, we didn't really think much of it other than how cool would it be to have a theme song for a TV show. Kevin Bright, the executive producer, was a Rembrandts fan, thankfully. He loved our first two albums, and he wanted the theme song to be recorded by us.
Mm-hmm.
So the musical director, a guy named Michael Skloff, who had come up with the chords for the song, and a lyricist named Allie Willis, wrote the lyrics, we were brought in to flesh it out and give it that Rembrandt sort of stamp.
Mm-hmm.
And so we recorded the first version, the 42-second version, really quickly. That was it. You know, intro, verse, chorus, it was done. Aired, we did that on a Saturday. I think we mixed it on a Sunday, and it aired the following Tuesday, I think, when the show was originally on. And then it just blew up. I mean, kids were calling radio stations asking for that song, but of course the full version didn't exist. So a DJ in Nashville, I wish I could remember his name, it's just slipping my mind right now,
mm-hmm.
Looped it, which is to take, you know, the 42-second version and turn it into a, you know, minute-and-a-half version. And then it just went viral all over the United States. All the sister stations were playing it. Then it spilled over into other stations. And by that point, it was a hit without ever being, you know, a full version. So that's when Phil and I went back in the studio with Michael Skloff and wrote the rest of the song, which was to become the, you know, the single.
Yeah. So you're writing this song and it's taking off. It has like, it becomes like its own animal almost. Do you remember what was that first show like when you were playing to pretty good crowds? Cause you had a really great fan base from the get go, but then it turns in from like, a couple hundred people to thousands. Like, what was that?
Yeah,
like?
I think probably from a couple hundred to a thousand. I think the other 300 or 400 were moms with their kids. So it changed quite a bit. It sent our album at that time off sort of on a different trajectory. But it was a super amazing time for us. The song was just bigger than life, really. I mean, it kind of overshadowed everything we did, and we were on the road for 3 years supporting the album that fortunately, because there wasn't a single released, you know, went double platinum, because mm-hmm. if you wanted that song, you had to buy the record. Mm-hmm. Pretty tricky, huh?
So genius.
Yes, genius.
These
record company geniuses.
and I love it, because it's just so incredible what a song can do. It can bring people together, no matter if they know the words or not. People know that song. That's like the beautiful thing about music. I do got to ask you, because I have you on the phone, when they're spinning that song, you see friends on TV every single day, repeats and all over the world. Are you getting paid every single time that song is playing?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man,
I think
Danny.
It's like a nickel. I think it's a nickel, maybe.
That's a lot of nickels. I think
2.5 cents.
That's incredible.
The cool thing is for a lowly little musician like me and Phil, is like we get invited to the Academy Awards and all that stuff. We're SAG-AFTRA members, and we get the screeners. It's pretty cool.
Jeez,
not to mention great insurance.
Oh my, yeah, I could only imagine. I could only imagine. Again, we're talking with Danny Wild from the Rembrandts. You know him, you love him. They have this new album out called Via Satellite, and I'm loving the album. I mean, just thinking about how you write, it's almost like you're a new age Everly Brothers, is what I often like to see you guys as, because I just love the sound of it, and it's just so great. How long have you been working on these songs, for this album, by the way?
For probably 10 years.
Jeez.
Or longer. It's 2019 now. We wrote Come to California. We started that song, which is Come to California. We started that song back in, I think, 2003. Didn't finish it. We had a verse and a chorus, cut it with the band and everything like that, and just, okay, so we need to come up with a second verse and a chorus and a bridge and all that stuff, and we just never got around to it. And then we started going through the pile, which I'll do about every 4 or 5 years, and found that little gem, and this has happened with a bunch of different songs that ended up being on the album. And Phil and I said, why did we not finish the song? It's so fun, you know. And so then we got together and finished a bunch of stuff that was unfinished, and that's how we work.
Jeez, it's an incredible album. I'm loving it. You can spin it everywhere coming up here. And just one more thing, are you coming to Chicago anytime soon?
Yeah, we are. We're actually not full band, but we're setting up a tour now for spring 2020 and spring and summer, and then we'll be doing Europe. But coincidentally enough, the 25th anniversary of the Friends TV show, and hence the song, mm-hmm. They're doing these pop-ups, I'm sure you've heard of. They're mm-hmm. the Central Perk, where they recreate the set and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I believe, you'd have to check the dates, but I believe...
That's Danny Wild, the lead singer of the Rembrandts, and I don't know if we got to it, but he did say his favorite show was Seinfeld. Yes, can you believe it? Seinfeld. So thanks again, Danny. Welcome back to WGN Radio. This is your host, Mike Heidemann, in for Dave Plyer. Now, believe it or not, I have a podcast that I do here on the station. I have a couple, actually. One is Sound Sessions, where I take in-depth interviews, full length, where we kind of
divulge and learn a lot about the musicians that we know and love. And I kind of really enjoy it. And that's Danny Wilde was one of my guests on Sound Sessions. You can catch that on WGNRadio.com. But you can also find this podcast that I'm very proud about doing. It's Two Dudes, One Disc. And yes, it's where I get a guest on and we talk about their favorite album. It could be anything in the entire world. We've had everything from, you know, Sting and the Police. We had somebody do a Rocky Horror Picture Show the other day. And I knew when I started this podcast that I'd eventually have to cover this band. And honestly, there was no one else I could think of who more so fit the bill than this person. Former WGN video master of the reel and the president of the Eddie Vedder Fan Club, Eric Nieverowski. What's going on, Eric? Long time no talk.
So thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm absolute. I mean, just great intro music with Once. Pearl Jam. It's the best. They're the best band ever. Thanks so much for having me on.
absolutely. Because I know that you and I were kind of diving back and forth in between. Should we do Hootie and the Blowfish or should we do Pearl Jam? Hootie or Pearl?
Right.
And you, my friend, are one of the biggest Pearl Jam fans in the entire world, or at least in my eyes. Where did this love for this band come about?
Yeah, so I definitely know a lot more Pearl Jam, bigger fans than I, but I would say I'm probably in that top 10%, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I was, I'll never forget it, I was staying at my Aunt Carol's house in Bolingbrook, Illinois. And my parents were in France, and my parents didn't let me watch MTV. And my aunt did. And I'm sitting there in front of her TV watching MTV. It was the summer of 1992. I was just about, 11 or 12 years old, and I saw the Even Flow video. And this video came and smacked me right in the face. It was something I had never heard before. That wasn't the sort of music that was popular at the time. You know, in the early 90s, you still had kind of the tail end of the hair metal and, you know, sort of glam metal with Slaughter and Poison and Warrant and all that stuff. And I saw this Even Flow video with this driving sound and these lyrics that I couldn't quite pick up on, but I knew that I loved. And this man in a flannel shirt hanging from the rafters over a live show, and everyone in the crowd just going nuts. And from that moment, I have been absolutely hooked on all things Pearl Jam.
I love it, man. Again, we're talking about 10, the debut Pearl Jam album. And of course, on Two Dudes, One Disc, we dive in every single song with careful analysis, song by song, mm-hmm. throughout the entire album. So let's dive into that song. This will take you back to Aunt Carol's house, Even Flow, number two on the album. Now, when I hear that song, I'm hearing the great vibey, you know, wah-wah guitar, the amazing, visceral, just growly vocals of Eddie Vedder. What are you thinking about when you hear that song?
Yeah, so when I hear that song now, I mean, I'm still transformed. Like, I go back to my aunt's living room and seeing that video for the first time. And then also, you know, that Even Flow as a song is pretty much one of the benchmarks of a Pearl Jam live show. And I'm going to show my Pearl Jam nerdiness. There's a quote where Jeff Ament, the bass player, said they used the album 10 as a way to start touring. Because Pearl Jam wasn't a band for a very long time before they recorded 10. Pearl Jam started out of the ashes of Mother Love Bone with Stone Gossard and Jeff Ament, and they brought in Eddie Vedder and Mike McCready, and they weren't a band for very long before they got the record deal and recorded this record. So I have to think about that, and then I also think about July 2016, night two at Wrigley Field, where it was probably one of the best versions of Even Flow I've ever seen live. I've seen 50-plus Pearl Jam shows, and so for me, that song just takes me to a live show.
Speaking of a live show, how about we get to song number three, Alive?
Yep.
You
You know, it's funny because diving back into this album, I listened to it a little bit earlier today. I forget about how many great songs Pearl Jam really has. I mean, this is a strong, strong way to get out of the gate with Once, Even Flow, and Alive. Now, what was it about those Wrigley shows that made them so special? I mean, why do they always sell out? Why does Eddie Vedder, you find him playing on the street corner in front of the stadium sometimes. What is that connection that people have and that field?
Yeah, so it's I'm glad you asked, because a lot of people, when I would say, oh, I'm going to see Pearl Jam this weekend, and I would get that sort of smart alecky response of, oh, I didn't know Pearl Jam was still around. But they sell out every single show they play. And for those Wrigley shows, that was kind of a special, where they didn't really do a big tour. They did the home and the away show. So they did two nights at Wrigley Field, two nights in Boston, the away shows at Fenway Park, and then three nights wherever the Mariners play in Seattle. So those shows were great because they're sort of a destination, right? The average Pearl Jam fan, I would say, is in their upper 40s to 50s. They're able to bring their kids now. And what, you know, I'm not a Cubs fan by any means, but there's nothing better than a wonderful, clear summer night at Wrigley Field, if it's a ball game or if it's a Pearl Jam concert or if it's a Billy Joel concert or a Foo Fighters concert. It's just such a great place to see a show. And, you know, Eddie Vedder grew up, I believe, in the Evanston area, so he has a real connection with the Cubs. And with those shows in 2016, there was also a documentary called Let's Play 2. And you should definitely check it out because it highlights, you know, those two nights, but also Eddie's love for the Cubs, because that was the year they won the World Series. So it kind of... That was like the sort of plot line B to that documentary film. Yeah, but I mean, those first three songs, I would say it's the best side A in rock history. You know, you got
whoa,
you know, you got
praise.
One, Even Flow, Alive, Go Into Why Go Here, then Black and Jeremy. I mean, those songs just really kind of defined the 90s and really defined where rock music is today, I think.
So the sad part about getting to be on air with you, Eric, there's only one small thing, and that's we need to do a speed round of these songs. And I'd love to play Why Go and Black, but we got to jump into the heart of the album. How about Jeremy?
Sure, do it.
Now, this song takes me back to driving around in my car and going to, you know, baseball practice or heading over to high school, and they would play this on, like, a constant loop on this one station that may or may not be here in Chicago. And it just it brings me back to good times. It makes me think of summer, and I just remember hearing this guy's voice. And it's weird because there's something about Eddie Vedder's voice that just separates him from anybody. Like, he could sing Ba Ba Black Sheep, and I'd be like, that's Eddie Vedder. That's him. That's not anybody else. You know, what was that, like, first tinging in your ear when you're like, you know, this might be my favorite band of all time?
I just think I really can't put a word to it, but, like, even when I hear it now through my phone – here in Glasgow, Scotland, through you in Chicago, I had goosebumps just listening to his voice. I can't quite put my finger on it, but it's just something that if it was like a musical soulmate, I would say that his songwriting and the rest of the band's musicianship is just lined up with who I was at that point, being a sort of geeky, portly 11, 12-year-old to now a 38-year-old father of two with an apartment here lined with Pearl Jam tour posters. It's just stuck with me all the time, and that didn't really happen with a lot of other bands from that era. You know what I mean? And it's so funny that you say that. You know, that song Jeremy reminds you of a good time, you know, like your youth. And there's a big part of that for me, too. But also, that is such a sad song, like lyrically about, you know, a true story of a bullied kid who took his own life. But irony, right?
Yeah, it's true. You know, it's interesting you spoke about how
they weren't a band for very long until
right.
this album came out, and then all of a sudden it just exploded. Like it was the right time, right place. And I love that. I do got to ask you, though, because you did move. I mean, you and I would talk about music all the time in the halls of WGN, mm-hmm. and that's how we kind of bonded together, was just through talking about music and documentaries. What's the scene like in Glasgow, Scotland right now? Is there a big Pearl Jam contingent there?
Well, I don't get out much because I have a 10-month-old baby now. But in our apartment, I mean, Pearl Jam is still definitely there in this, you know, in here. And I met my wife at a Pearl Jam show at Madison Square Garden in 2008.
And I'm
here now, you know, with her and her family in Glasgow, Scotland. And I actually finally got to go out last night. And I saw a great cover band at an American-themed bar called Buck's Bar, and they were just doing a lot of old rockabilly tunes. And actually, I'm going to my first show here in a couple weeks. I'm going to go see Wilco,
Chicago one.
Tweety Wilco at the Barrel Ends Ballroom, which is a legendary music hall that maybe only has about 1,500 capacity. So I'm going to see... one of my favorite bands, who I've seen in large arenas and theaters, and I'm going to see them in a small club. So in that aspect, when American bands get here, they're either playing like the big arenas. Pink was just playing at the large football. That's what you guys call soccer. Mm-hmm. Playing at the large football stadium down the street. She did like 3 sold out nights there. It's festival season here in the UK, so we had Foo Fighters at a park. A couple weeks ago, it was night one was The Cure, night two was the Foo Fighters. So there is, music is very popular here. I haven't really gotten too much in the Scottish music yet, but definitely, you know, like you had the gentleman on from the Rembrandts earlier with Friends. Friends is still a huge cultural phenomenon here.
Really? Okay.
It's nuts, yeah.
Man. It's a whole different world out there. It's incredible. Hey, so we got you for a few more minutes. Again, we're talking to Eric Nieworowski, the mind behind a lot of WGN videos. If you were watching us back just a couple of years ago, you'd see his amazing work and all the great things that he does. We're going to dive into our last song on the album, and then I'm going to ask you 3 very important questions about this band, Pearl Jam. Ben?
Wonderful. Yep.
Song Release. Just let him be free. Let Eddie be free. All right, so I asked 3 questions to all of our guests here on Two Dudes, One Disc. We got to know, first of all, what's your go-to karaoke Pearl Jam song?
I think of karaoke as more of a sort of hokey thing, and my love for Pearl Jam is so ingrained in my life that I actually would never do a Pearl Jam song on karaoke. But for the sake of the show, I would probably do Black.
Black, okay. We had a texter text in from the 815. Where did Pearl Jam come up with their name?
Right, so don't quote me on this because I'm not a licensed Pearl Jam historian, but I believe... someone in the band's grandma's name was Pearl, and she made jam.
That is awesome. That is, well, I think we just lost him. He's like, all right, I'm out. On that note, it's his great-grandmother. Eric, if you're listening right now, we got to jump over to our break really quick. Eric Nieworowski, he might be calling again, but again, 2 Dudes, 1 Disc. Check it out on WGNRadio.com. I'm going to post this, and we can hear all about the great, great stories behind Eric's life, why he loves Pearl Jam, and so much more. We have a lot of great episodes on that page. But right now, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this here on WGN. If you're just joining us today, we're diving into the amazing album 10 by Pearl Jam. This is all has to do with the fact that I host a podcast called 2 Dudes, 1 Disc. Let's get Eric on one more time before he splits out. He's calling in all the way from Scotland. Eric, did the karaoke people get mad at you and they made you hang up?
Yes, they got very upset. Like, karaoke is not a novelty. Yep.
Well, Eric, I can't thank you enough, man, for joining us on the show at your old homestead on WGN. One last song. If you could ask Eddie Vedder one question, what would it be?
Why are you so awesome?
Eric, that's the perfect question. That's the mic drop right there. I like to think that he would give you really like well thought out answer, like with a few bullet points and everything, and then he would just reach into his pocket and just grab something, and it's just glitter, and he just throws it in the air and disappears.
That's exactly how I imagined it too. So,
Eric Nierwarowski, it's great to talk to you again. I am so happy that we got to do this. Where can people find your creative work and anything else that you've been going on and doing these days?
You can find me on Twitter. It's at Eric Edmunds. It's ERIKEDMUNDS. And that's pretty much the only spot right now. So check me out on there.
Right on. Hey, Eric, thanks again for joining us. You can find all of this on WGNRadio.com. It was great talking to you, my friend.
Thanks, Mike. Miss you, bud. Talk to you soon.
Miss you too, man. Welcome into WGN. This is your host, Mike Heidemann, and I am so, so stoked to be with you all tonight. Thanks again for listening, and even more so, I'm very excited to see my good friend Dave Schwann sitting next to me. How are you doing tonight?
Good morning to you, Michael. Happy Labor Day weekend.
Can you believe it's already Labor Day?
No.
Where the heck did summer and
we say
the entire
this
year
every
go?
Year, mm-hmm. And the trouble is, they go faster and faster.
Gosh.
Which means all of us need to make more time to get out and do things during the summer because it's so short.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you go on any big trips this year?
We went on one in May, end of May and June. I had work commitments all summer that I had to do, so I wasn't able to take an extended trip during the summer. So this May, my father and I went to North and South Dakota. So we went to three national parks, Mount Rushmore, a couple other places, and did a road trip. Flew into Minneapolis and then drove out western North and South Dakota and back. Just a great big loop. You get an idea of just how
it is wild.
Big this is. This mm-hmm. country is.
You are a rambling man. Every time I talk to you, you're going somewhere else. I love it.
And now again, I'm working. I've got a lot of work that coming up this fall,
mm-hmm.
but we will make time to get up to northern Michigan or northern Wisconsin to take in the color because it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
To take in what we have around the Midwest. You know, we've got a lot going on here.
Do you just go on all road trips, or is it a lot of planes that you
well,
go on?
This time
you seem like a road trip kind of guy. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Driven really through all 48 states, been to Alaska and Hawaii also. So we've covered 50 states. We've covered all 50 states during my lifetime.
Yeah.
Not in the last 10 years, but during my lifetime. But this trip was a good example. We flew to Minneapolis and then rented a car mm-hmm. and drove. Let's see. The trip we did a couple of years ago, we went out to Seattle to visit a cousin, flew there, and then drove a little bit. But then we flew to Hawaii. We rented a car in Hawaii, drove around the Big Island.
Look at you, fearless. We were talking about fear a little bit earlier.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, this is awesome because as some of the listeners know, especially people who listen to WGN for years and years, I started out on WGN as Dave Plyer's producer back in the
day.
Yes,
you did.
And that's how I met you.
Right, right.
And we used to do this same segment back then. This day in history, yeah. And we're doing it right now. Ben, hit that spot.
Oh, now he's going to play it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I wondered where it was.
Hey, Luke, may the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I've been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
This is Mike in for Dave Plyer, Mike Heideman. Dave, I thought that was the Sam Cooke song. What is this, a new? I was waiting for it to
be my memory because that's what we played. Don't know much about history and
yeah, way back.
That's not the name of the song. I should know the name of this song because the original was Sam Cooke. James Taylor did a cover version of it when I was in college.
Days like no, you know what? That's where we start in 2015.
What a Wonderful World!
Oh,
What a Wonderful World!
See,
what a wonderful world this would be.
The thing that I love about This Is History is I get to see and sit with you, and you have the greatest mind. You're just a wealth of knowledge. So let's just dive right
into.
And
now I won't know one thing that you talk about.
Well, how about in 1957? Have you ever heard of the Edsel? Because the Edsel was introduced on September 4th, 1957, E-Day. According to its advertising campaign, the Ford Motor Company unveils the Edsel. What was this? What was this all about?
The Edsel was an offshoot. The Ford wanted to do what General Motors had done for years. They had Chevy, Pontiac, and Buick, and they wanted a different model to sell. I saw a story a long time ago with the head of PR for Ford Motor Company, and they did what we now call focus groups, a test of what names people would like for cars. Edsel came in dead last.
I was going to say, where did Edsel come in?
Edsel came in dead last. Edsel was the name of one of Henry Ford's sons.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
So they were determined, nope, even though nobody likes the name, we're still going to call it the Edsel.
That makes a lot of sense.
It only lasted 3 years.
Yeah, in its first year, the Edsel sold just 64,000 cars and lost $250 million, or translated to today's money, $2.5 billion for the Ford Motor Company.
Ford does not want to lose $2.5 billion again. So
no,
the Edsel
no.
came and went. And it was funny, and you mentioned road trips.
did you drive an Edsel?
No, but we did a Route 66 trip 10 years ago, and there was this really cool place in the middle of nowhere in Arizona that is known for a restored area stop and also car show and so forth. And there were a string of Edsels. They were in fantastic shape.
Really?
In the middle of nowhere. Yeah.
That is so funny. Oh, man, I wouldn't want to drive one of those cars. I drove a Chevy Impala for years, and it was my parents. And now I drive a scooter, so I'm not really good with cars. But in 1969, speaking of money, the first ATM came to be. ATM went to revolutionize the banking industry. And it's funny because the ATM, automatic teller machine, people call it the ATM machine.
Yeah.
Double machine. You can't do that. Do you remember when the first ATM came around?
Yeah, I didn't get an ATM card until maybe the mid to late 70s. They were there.
Were they like a new fancy thing?
Very much so.
Like kind of like the internet. It's like, well, I don't know what this thing's going to do. It's going to steal my money.
Oh, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And as I recall, they were introduced. Not all of the banks had them.
Mm-hmm.
The largest bank, what is now Chase, was First National Bank of Chicago back then.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It started in Chicago.
No, okay. Chase ended up buying it and other banks.
Mm-hmm.
But, for decades, a century, the First National Bank of Chicago. I'm using that as an example.
Yeah.
It was a big bank. They would have it. The smaller regional banks, maybe not so much. Cost money to put in.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, you weren't tied into satellite technology like you are now, where you can use an ATM anywhere in the world and get money. That was not the case when this started. It didn't just happen. It was an eventual thing, an evolutionary thing. So I didn't get an ATM card until I was out of college and working.
Okay, well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because who knows what would happen with a young Dave Schwann having an ATM card.
Well, the checkbook wasn't working for me either. Constantly overdrawn, and I was getting notices. So I would get, if I had an ATM card, it would have said insufficient funds. You cannot withdraw.
Oh, man. Back in the day.
In 1974, Ford pardons Nixon. This week in 1974, the controversial executive action where Ford pardoned his disgraced predecessor, Richard M. Nixon, for any crimes that he has committed. And this is so funny because of the time we're living in now. And Nixon, you know, I get it, voter fraud, you know, the whole Watergate scandal. Seems like small potatoes now. I don't want to get too far into it, but it is so crazy that that was a big moment for this nation when Ford pardoned him.
It was. The bigger moment really was, you know, there are two things, actually, because of the resignation, which had never happened before. A president stepping out of office, resigning, and resigning in disgrace. Mm-hmm. You know, not resigning because he had health problems or this and that, or he wanted to go back to his farm
yeah.
or what have you. No. This was a situation where, you know, he was just in over his head, and his, you know, closest aides and confidants and closest allies in the Senate, Barry Goldwater included, came to him and said, "Mr. President, you have no support
Jeez.
In Congress. You can't do this. I'm sorry." And so he finally resigned.
Mm-hmm. That's an incredible story.
The reasoning for Ford pardoning Nixon was that he wanted to move on. He wanted Watergate was a real, real problem and a burden for the country and the citizenry. And his idea was to, let's get this behind us and move on. We have double-digit inflation. We still have the remnants of the Vietnam War. We still have things to talk about and with problems to solve. It ultimately cost him the election, because if you remember, in 76, Jimmy Carter beat him.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
The peanut farmer.
Yep.
Who's still building houses to this day.
Jimmy Carter beat him. Well, the Habitat for Humanity was founded after his tenure in office.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I saw some posts about him still building houses.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
To this moment.
He's a remarkable man. Think of what he's been through health-wise.
Jeez.
You know.
It's the idea of wanting to become president, it kind of baffles me. Like, it's such a huge undertaking. It makes me uncomfortable. I could feel the weight on my back just thinking about that. 1982, the iconic 1980s movie Valley Girls hit theaters, while Valley Girl becomes a top 40 hit for Frank and Moon Unit Zappa.
I have the 45
you do?
Somewhere.
Was it that big of a hit that people were flocking to it, like, all over the place?
You might call it a novelty record.
Okay.
You know, because it was, you know, they're making fun of a Valley Girl, and you can hear, you know.
Yeah, I can hear. Like, totally.
My God! You know, and it was Zappa's commentary, really, on that mindset, that mentality. Mm-hmm. And I remember him on a very early David Letterman show, just coming on, he said, "I hate the San Fernando Valley." And he said, so he was really parodying, you know, the whole mentality of that, the Valley Girl, you know, totally materialistic, I'm out for me.
Yeah, and he brought it to popular culture.
Very
and then
much
now
so.
Whenever you think about California, the first thing you do is you say, "Oh my God, you know, let's go to the mall."
Totally.
1996, this is a big day for music. I mean, this is a big week for music. 1996, Tupac was shot. Actor and hip-hop recording artist Tupac Shakur is shot several times in Las Vegas, Nevada. Now, this is something that I lived through, and I remember when I would be watching MTV News, Kurt Loder going on to the screen and saying, you know, Tupac was shot. And it started this whole wave of East Coast, West Coast rap battles and everything. Now, how involved were you with East Coast, West Coast rap battles?
I wasn't. I wasn't. I was watching the young folks deal with that. The rap stuff? No, I wasn't really. Ask me about when John Lennon was shot.
Yeah, oh.
So,
that's,
you know, that's going to be 40 years next year.
Wasn't there, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that story is incredible, too. He's just walking to his apartment.
Well, he was actually out signing autographs.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was out signing autographs, and that's when he was killed.
Man.
Unfortunately.
Well, you know, not to be too downtrodden, but in 1997, another big moment in celebrity farewells happened when Princess Diana had her funeral.
Yes.
Back in 1997.
Yeah.
Now, for me, personally, my parents planned a trip, their big excursion to Europe, in years in advance.
They went there that same week that her funeral happened.
Oh, they
happened.
Did? Yeah. They happened to be there coincidentally when that
just happened to
wow.
be there coincidentally, and they remember they went to, I mean, it was all of London. It was all...
It was the world.
It was the world, and they remember there were people, this always sticks with me, but there were people who were on each street corner handing out Kleenex to every single person
because
they were so sad.
Yeah.
I mean, the entire city was overrun with people who were loved her. I mean, Elton John wrote "Candle in the Wind," or he recorded "Candle in the Wind" for her to raise money. I mean, was there a bigger news story that entire year? No, absolutely not. Decade? It was in the top 10 for sure.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts regarding that that whole controversy and everything that went down with that?
Well, it was, first of all, it's, you know, the tragedy of her death resulting from a high-speed chase.
Yeah.
And the driver lost control in that tunnel and hit the wall. You know, it's horrible. Apparently getting away from, you know, paparazzi, photographers that have to take a shot of each and everything these people do.
That was the first time I heard that phrase, paparazzi too.
Yeah.
It was all over the news, and I didn't even know that that existed or was that scary.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a European, more of a European thing, you know, an equivalent of what you might see here, you know, with celebrity photographers. It's an Italian term, paparazzi. It's an Italian term. But I remember that Saturday night, the word was that she had been very seriously injured.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next morning, you know, the fact that she had died as mm-hmm. a result of that. But yeah, the whole time, that time from her death through the entire week of that was a real cause for mourning.
Yeah.
You know, MOURN is what I mean. Mourning. It was just as big a story when she got married to Prince Charles, 1981.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And then
the divorce,
mm-hmm.
the two kids. You know, she charmed the world. She really did. So to have this happen.
People still talk about her today.
Oh, absolutely. And they will. And they mm-hmm. will continue to do so. And now you see her two sons grown up.
Yeah.
Both of them with children of their own.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so sad that she didn't live to see her grandchildren like that.
That's so true. And it's so heartbreaking to, you know, think about those stories, because every time you see those interviews with her children, the princes, and they always mention her. They always will speak
sure.
about her importance in their lives. And it just, as a young boy myself who was growing up in the suburbs of Chicago in McHenry County, I remember, for me, it affected me when I would go with my mom to wherever we were going, the grocery store or something, and I would hear that Elton John song on repeat on every single radio station, and people would be talking about it on WGN, and it just encapsulated the entire world.
Yeah.
It was a very big moment.
Yeah, it certainly was.
2002, the first American Idol winner was Kelly Clarkson, believe it or not. So good for Kelly.
She's done well.
Yeah, she has done well. She's still around. I think she's like a morning show or something going on.
I think so. Yeah. But she's done all right.
We should get her on the show.
Well, you know, people that win those shows and do big, they can be kind of a flash in the pan. They can do something.
Very true.
And then here today, gone tomorrow.
Very true. Have you ever been on TV, Dave?
No.
Well, ever thought about it?
When I was younger.
Okay.
When I was younger.
No game shows or anything?
No.
Sat in the audience for a game show?
No. I think I was in an audience once for an Oprah show.
Okay.
I got invited, and I was just there for an Oprah show.
But, you know, that's going to be amazing.
I wanted to be on Bozo Circus when I was growing up, but that didn't even get close to that. So.
I think that was everybody. I'm still looking for my name in that big tumbler that they used to have. I'm like, come
on. Bozo drum.
2014, legendary comedian Joan Rivers dies. And we have a clip about this because I think that she spoke to Dave for a little bit.
Yeah, I'll do that.
You've done it for almost five decades, which is absolutely incredible.
Made a living making people laugh. How nice is that?
It is fabulous. Well, I got to tell you, when I was younger and watching The Tonight Show, and they would announce, you know, that tonight's guest host was Joan Rivers, I'd get so excited. I was thrilled that you were there for the day, for the week. I saw you with Rickles at the Foxwoods in Connecticut. You are you're right.
I love him. What a fun, he's much funnier, if you can believe it, off stage than on. Hilarious.
Yeah, that's all. Well, as are you. And I have to get this out of the way. You know, there are times I've seen journalists, Joan, or hosts interview someone that have no point of reference. And I know you know what I'm getting at here. They don't know who they don't know who they're interviewing. They read a few lines on Wikipedia, saw you on YouTube for a few seconds, and you did the CNN interview last weekend, and you know, it's like they are oblivious of who you are. They've never seen your act in the past 5 days.
That's my favorite radio host right there, Dave Plyer. he gets so many amazing, amazing guests. And that
he
was
works to get him, too. He doesn't give up.
He busts it. I mean, for real. And I think that he was her last radio interview ever.
Is that right?
To be honest. Yeah. Because I remember cutting the audio for that interview before she passed away. And then it was just like the next week that it happened.
Yeah,
which is it's heartbreaking. Yeah. What did you were you around when she would be hosting Carson
and
she was at her prime?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. By that time, I was involved with morning radio, mm-hmm. and you couldn't TiVo the shows. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, if you were lucky, you had a videotape recorder and set the timer for it.
Yeah,
but I remember her subbing for Carson, Johnny mm-hmm. Carson, Rickles also. Definitely Rickles.
There's nobody who could do it like her, though. She was just so likable.
Yeah. And an engaging interviewer also. Mm-hmm. You know, she was just an engaging person that whoever was on as a guest, they would just get into conversations and roll with it.
Yeah. You know, before she passed away, I think a year before she passed away, she came to Crystal Lake, Illinois to perform at the Rouse Center. And my mom and my dad and I
went
and see her. Yeah. And you think that, seeing her live, she can't really be that dirty. She was the dirtiest comedian I've ever heard. She came out swinging with all the words that she knows.
She wasn't on TV. She could do anything.
No, she couldn't. And she kept being like, "Where am I, Rockford?" And she's like, "No, it's Crystal Lake." Dave, I had a total pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. And This Is History. It's great to see you again, too.
Yeah, you too.
All right, see you on the road, Dave.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back after this. Hey, WGN, we are back for the Dave Plyer Show. This is your host, Mike Heideman. I think we have Walter's perspective coming up, the inquisitive, great mind of Walter Jacobson. Let's hear him right now.
If there ever were a time to stay tuned to the news in Chicago, this is it. Tonight at 6 o'clock, Mayor Lightfoot on radio and television will present her first address on the state of the city, which right now is pretty bad and scary. Chicago does not have enough money to pay its very big bills, while awaiting still bigger, even hard-to-imagine bills that are on the way. That's what the mayor will tell us tonight, that and what she will do to make the bad and scary better, how she will spend how much money in her new city budget. Mayor Emanuel led her to believe $500 million, but she now knows it's nearly $1 billion and $30 billion more that she's required by law to begin spending on pensions for police and firemen and women and 15,000 other city employees. Oh, what can she do? Well, she can ask, not tell, but ask, the Illinois General Assembly for permission to impose more sales taxes or increase taxes on the sale of million-dollar homes. She needs Illinois to help out Chicago. But too many politicians in the Assembly view that as bailing out Chicago, and they won't do it. There are two things left for Ms. Lightfoot to do. One is to cut that billion-dollar budget in half, which will mean cutting city services in half, and she can't do that. So she will have to increase our property taxes. Poor her. Poor us. I'm Walter Jacobson, and that's my perspective. For more, visit WGNradio.com or download the WGN Radio app.
Thank you so much, Walter. That was sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com. Everyone, Ben, do we have another break? We have one more break? Okay, let's hit that break here right now. Back on WGN.
Tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Walter Jacobson. I've been telling you about the trouble I had hearing things clearly and my concern about looking old wearing hearing aids. Well, there's no need to worry about that because Dr. Rana Fisher at Hearing Health Center fitted me with new Lyric hearing aids that are totally invisible. You couldn't find them if you looked. and I can wear them day and night for months at a time, in the shower, in the gym, wherever, without ever having to take them out or change batteries. You can try Lyric hearing aids right now for 30 days without obligation. Call 833-GO-HEARING. Make an appointment in Chicago, Park Ridge, Highland Park, Oak Brook, or Naperville. You'll get a free hearing checkup, and you'll walk out hearing better than you thought possible. And no one but you will know why. Call 833-GO-HEARING or book online at WGNHEARING.com.
The EPA reports the air we breathe in our home is more polluted than the air outside. The healthy solution? Green Tea Services Air Duct Cleaning.
Service to a green tea.
Hi, this is Tonya Khoury, owner of Green Tea Services. Our Green Tea Air Duct Purification System thoroughly cleans all your intakes, returns, and furnace. You'll breathe fresh, healthier air.
800-5-GREEN-TEA.
Green Tea has the highest BBB rating. Our crews are bonded Green Tea employees you can trust in your home. We'll clean your air ducts of dust and allergens so your family breathes clean air. Now get our $97 special. Yes, only $97. Plus our 100% satisfaction Green Tea guarantee. Call Green Tea Air Duct Cleaning now for details. 800-5-GREEN-TEA.
Green Tea Services. Service to a
green tea.
800-5-GREEN-TEA.
800-5-GREEN-TEA. Or greenteaservices.com.
Tomorrow.
Hey, put the ether can down for a second.
Let him go. Let him play football.
Man up about it.
It's kickoff week, and the best Bears coverage begins as Dan Hampton and Ed Obradovich preview the season and the stories of Chicago football.
Hey, we had to get better. That's one thing about a young team.
Tune in Monday at 4 on the station with the best Bears coverage, WGN Radio. Sponsored by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
WGN Radio, this is your host Mike Heidemann in for Dave Plyer. Thank you guys so much for listening in tonight. It's been a total pleasure being here with you in your car speakers or wherever you're listening to me from. You can find me at WGNRadio.com. Just search Mike Heidemann. I also have a podcast called Sound Sessions, so make sure you check us out there. A lot of great music interviews. I just wanted to thank my stellar team. Ben Anderson, my producer, great seeing you, Ben. We had Dan Long as our engineer, Bob Ferguson, Dave Schwann, and of course, Roger Badish. Everybody, thank you so much for listening, and I will speak to you soon. Follow me at Arthur Fonzarelli or find me on Facebook, Michael Heidemann.